The Alan Watts iPhone app is now available on the iTunes App Store, featuring the entire Alan Watts podcast series at your fingertips. Visit alanwattsapp.com for more information.
I may as well begin with mantra yama aspect of it, because this is the most perplexing to us from our point of view and doesn't make any sense. That you know there is an age-old belief in spells and that certain formulae said in the right way will produce results. All of this descends philosophically, so far as Asia is concerned, from the Hindu Upanishadic idea that the world is the creation of sound. The Hindus say that in the beginning was Vak, which is exactly the same thing as saying in the beginning was the Word, as in the Gospel of St. John. But that doesn't mean the orders, like give him the word. The Vak means vibration. And so the name that is fundamentally Vak is the Sanskrit word Om. Because when you say Om, you begin at the back of your throat with O and you finish at your lips. And so you take in the whole range of sound. And so this word Om is called the Pranava. And it is the holiest of all names. And so you can chant Om, you know, and really stir up things. And so all but Hindus and Buddhists alike use this word Om. And will use it to set going a meditative state. This is very easy to do because it's awfully easy to concentrate on sound. It's much more difficult to keep your eyes still. You flicker because your eyes tend constantly to, it's natural for the eyes to rove over things. And you get, have difficulty and stopping your eyes from scanning. But sound is very easy to concentrate on. And the whole point of a mantra is it's a method of digging sound. Now, I hope you know what I mean by that, because I purposely used a very slangy popular word to dig. That means get right down into. So that you realize that the flow, the vibration of sound, is a way in which you experience basic existence, being here. And you can learn everything from it, because sound is not a constant. It comes and it goes. It's on and off. You only hear it because it is vibrating. And so herein is the lesson that life is on and off, black and white, life and death, inside and outside, knowing and not knowing. They're all in the vibration. But it's easy to explain that in words. But to understand it in your bones, to feel it, you have to learn how to listen to a sound. So then they invented this way of making chanting sounds. Now there are various ways in which this is understood by people in Asia. Incidentally, I should say that this, as a form of Buddhism, what I'm calling Vajrayana, the whole movement, sprung up in about the 9th century A.D. and its geographical distribution is from North India into Tibet, China and Japan and Mongolia. And it is highly characteristic of Tibetan Buddhism. So then, let's say there are various ways of understanding it. The word, the formulas used for mantra, are understood by the ignorant as being shortcuts. Instead of saying the whole sutra, the whole sutra is summed up in the formula, Om Mani Padme Hum. And you can say that. That'll do. You're a poor, weak slob, and out of infinite compassion, the bodhisattvas have arranged to get you into nirvana. Instead of going through all the heroic efforts of those saints and sages and meditation practices, you can just say, Om Mani Padme Hum. And in fact, you don't even need to say it. You can have it printed on paper and enclosed in a silver box on the end of a stick. And all you have to do is rotate the thing. So the popular idea of this is the shortcut. The next idea of it is the one I've been sort of talking about, which is that you concentrate on these formulae, on these sounds. And there's a third interpretation, which is you might call the esoteric interpretation, which was originally, as far as I know, the first person to really bring this up was Vasubandhu, whom I told you about last week, who lived, shortly before 400. And he said the whole point of mantra is that they don't mean anything at all. And that the word Om is completely meaningless, and that all these various different kinds of incantations are totally senseless. And the idea of repeating them is to liberate yourself from the notion that the universe means anything. All those forms of Buddhism which are associated with the Vajrayana are what is called tantric. And tantric, the word basically means web structure, warp and woof. Well now, tantra in Hindu context is a discipline that is sometimes called the fifth Veda. There are four Vedas, which are basic holy scriptures of Hinduism. The fifth Veda is, as it were, the esoteric one. Now, according to the four Vedas, in order to be liberated, you have to give up physical life. That is to say, you must not eat meat, you must not have sexual intercourse, you must not take alcohol, or any kind of consciousness-changing substance. There are various other things, I forget them all. But in Tantra, the whole idea is liberation through the forbidden things. That is to say, liberation in the world, belonging to the world, participating in the world. And sometimes it is therefore called the left-hand path. Once, as a Hindu story, you know, that the Brahma was asked the question, who will gain to union with you first, he who loves you or he who hates you? And Brahma replied, he who hates me, because he can think of me more often. So, you can, in other words, attain to liberation by one of two ways. One is by complete altruism, and the other is by total selfishness. And the moral of the whole thing is that if you are completely and consistently selfish, you will discover that yourself is the other. That you don't really experience yourself at all except in terms of others. When you say, I love myself, what do you mean? You mean you love being alive. And when you push it, you see, this is the point, to push it to an extreme. So The left-hand path is a very dangerous way of going about things, because nobody approves of it. I was discussing this morning with my father that sometime in the distant past we had witnessed a comedy wherein the stage was set of a man asleep in bed in a highly Victorian bedroom with all kinds of fancy furniture and terrible stuff, you know. And the alarm clock goes off. And he wakes up in a total rage. He immediately picks up his shoe and smashes the alarm clock. He then gets out of bed in fury. He rips the sheets to pieces, overturns the bed, finds a hammer somewhere, and starts breaking up all the crockery, the windows, and until the place is a total demolition. Finally, there is left in one corner one of those enormous standard lamps, you know, with all the sort of gewgaws on it. And he takes several runs at this, and finally he picks it up, and he flings it in the air. And as it comes down, it bounces. It was made of rubber. And this is the flip, you see, that... And that's the surprise I was talking about in the beginning. Satori, sudden awakening. It bounced. You know, you thought you were going to crash, and you bounced. And you see, this is the whole thing about Buddhism. We all think we're going to crash. And it must seem that way, because otherwise it won't be a surprise to bounce. So, if, in other words, you press your selfishness and you go into this whole question of, what do I really want? Supposing I could have it, supposing I had all the money, anything I can think of, what is it I'm after? And you explore all the sensations you can imagine, all the delights of pleasure, all the ecstasies, all the drunks, all the orgasms, all the anything you can think of. Go right through to the end of it. What is it you're looking for? You say, oh, I want to be flipped. You know, I want to be let out of myself. Well, when you're let out of yourself, that's altruism. He that would save his life shall lose it. And he that loses his life, or loses his life, shall find it. You go one way or the other, and it all comes to the same thing. All right, so in the same way, take the path of meditative discipline on concentration, where somebody is sitting there with a stick and says, you attend. See, I'm the master. You follow that way. See what you want to get that out of that. Try and get rid of yourself. That's one way of doing it. And there's certain kind of people who ought to take it that way. They want to. They don't know they're here unless they hurt. And that's the right way for them. We shouldn't condemn it. It's just like there are certain kinds of plants that grow this way, there are certain kinds of plants that go this way, and so there are many types. On the other hand, there's the mantra game, where people say, oh, this is so simple to do. You really don't have to chant it at all. It's just the shortest formula, and it's just this kind of cut. And then they get going into this thing, and they get fascinated. Singing, Om Mani Padme Hum. So something like that. Or like those Pure Land Buddhists in Japan. Namo Amida Butsu, Namo Amida Butsu, Namo Amida Butsu, Namo Amida Butsu, Namo Amida Butsu. And it eventually comes, Namanda 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 Namanda. You really get with it. And when you get with it, you suddenly realize it's doing you. Now, what's the difference between you and it? Self and other. Self-power, other-power. Jiriki-tariki. It's all one. Only you play it isn't. Because you have to do that. I say have to. That's not quite the right word. You do that in order to create the sensation of existence. Which is called, now you see it. No, you don't.
You've been listening to Alan Watts from the Spoken Word Library of the Electronic University. For copies of this and other Alan Watts programs, please go to alanwatts.com on the World Wide Web or call us toll-free at 1-800-WO-WATTS. That's ALANWATTS.com or 1-800-WO-WATTS. The Watts website features free audio downloads, program lists, and information on Watts' life and works. Once again, that's alanwatts.com or 1-800-WO-WATTS.